This is Jonathan Lane of Fan Film Factor, and today I'm here with that amazing wizard of CGI, half of the cast of Trek Yards, and that Trexbert extraordinaire, Samuel Cockings. Welcome back, Samuel.
Well, thank you. That's a hell of an intro. Thank you.
Yeah, I made that all up just as I was talking, but it's all true.
Appreciate it. Thank you. It's nice to be interviewed for once.
That's true. For those of you who don't follow Trek Yards, it is a web series that Samuel does with his partner, Stuart Foley, and it is really amazing. If you like the technology of Star Trek, if you like the spaceships, if you like the CGI, if you like all of the things that don't involve actual people, except the people who make them, which is also, you do some interviews as well. It is fascinating. So my suggestion is, if you like listening to Samuel today, go and listen to Trek Yards tomorrow, or later on
I'll sound smarter there, I'm sure, quoting, you know, deck numbers and all these fun facts.
But today is not about Trek Yards. Today is about your latest fan film endeavor, which is called Convergence. And yes. Let me give you guys a little 411 on Convergence. 411 is what we say in America to give information. That's what we dial for information. You might have heard that Samuel's not from here. Or if you're not from America, he's not from where I am.
I have an accent.
He has an accent, folks.
I can't hear it, but I'm told by people.
I told them before the interview, I said, you have to speak in English. We speak English here. Although I do know I have an international audience, all three or four of you, so enjoy. Anyway, Convergence is really exciting, at least for me, and hopefully for you guys too.
Me too. Film fans. To be fair,
and,
me too.
And also for Samuel, because it is a crossover event. It is not just two fan films or three fan films or fan series crossing over, because we've had those before. You know, we had a crossover of Saladin and Antillus at some point. There were appearances of Vic Mignogna on Starship Farragut, and and obviously the famous Intrepid crossovers with Hidden Frontier. But this time it's not just two or three, it's five fan series all coming together. In fact, your code name for Convergence, if I remember correctly, was originally what, Samuel?
Working title was Star Trek Avengers.
Star Trek Avengers. So,
because that should say all in the pitch.
Exactly. Not at all unambitious there. anyway, it's really exciting. Over the few weeks that preceded the launch of his current Indiegogo campaign, Samuel teased it with three and eventually four. He added a bonus one that he didn't tell me about. Teasers that slowly revealed which fan films were going to be part of it. The first one was Starship Intrepid, with Nick Cook playing his character of Captain Daniel Hunter of the USS Intrepid. The second was Robin Hurt. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Okay. He's from the Netherlands. I have no idea how to pronounce Dutch names. But Robin plays Captain Alexander Richardson of the USS Batavia, or Batavia. And by the way, for those of you who don't know what the Batavia is or Batavia, go and Google it. It is a real thing, if you're Dutch. And his Star Trek fan film was the long-running Star Trek Dark Armada, which ran for many years, has been in hiatus for about, I don't know, a year and a half, two years now.
Yeah, 2 years. It's worth saying each of those fan film series are over 10 years old and produce multiple episodes each. These are the big legacy hitters, and I'm really excited to have those legends in the fan film community.
Yeah, it's very exciting on this side of the pond as well. By the way, Star Trek Intrepid is out of Scotland. So we've got Scotland, we've got the Netherlands. So with the third teaser, we discovered two more of the five crossovers. One of them was, very surprisingly, the long-forgotten Star Trek version of Renegades, because back before Renegades went out of the Star Trek timeline and reality, there was such a thing as Star Trek Renegades, and they were very much within canon. So we are going to see two things from Star Trek Renegades. We are going to see the Archer-class starship. Yours is called the USS Columbia. We're also going to see the bad guys from Star Trek Renegades. What are they called again?
The Siphons. And I thought they were always so cool. So, great to bring back.
Now, are we going to actually see a Siphon? Are we going to see an actual character? Or are we just going to see their ships?
Well, I mean, in a combat situation with a race that wants to destroy everything you are, you're not going to hail and say, "Hey, guys." You know, that's talking is not their intention. So I'm working on a potential cameo, but their actions speak louder than words.
There you go. Alrighty. And also in that third teaser, we had the appearance of Jim Van Doltren, who was originally in the fan series Starship Republic, which had a single fan vignette released called Serpent of Yesterday. I know they're still planning on filming more at the Stage 9 studios in Georgia. But Jim played a character, Terrence, what was his last name?
Captain Terrence St. James of the Republic.
Terrence St. James. Now, that was a TOS.
Yes.
Original series era fan film. And one of the things that you'll notice if you watch the teasers is that this is all TNG era. These are the, you know, the gray shouldered uniforms. So is it the same captain? Has he traveled through time, or is this some descendant? What is
Well, it's funny. He has traveled through time, but not from the TOS era. He is, in fact, our future captain.
My brain hurts. My brain hurts.
Yeah, he's, in fact, our future captain, which is why they've got the Archer class, which is a ship we see in the 10 years post Voyager Renegades show. The Archer class is a brand new ship from when he's from, and he's had to come back to save literally every single person in the Federation. He comes from a really, really dark day, and we'll get into the story a little bit later. But no, that's more of a spiritual crossover. I'm good friends with Jim. I worked on Republic since it's Indiegogo, and I'm heavily involved in Republic 3.0, as it's called in-house, and he's coming over. There might be some little references to his other character, but it might be a descendant, but not the same man.
So that brings us up to four of the five fan film fan series crossovers. And then just when you thought all the teasers were done, or at least I thought all the teasers were done, the next weekend, another teaser came out. But interestingly enough, this wasn't a teaser for Convergence. This was a teaser for Temporal Anomaly, which, for those of you who do not know, is another fan film that will be coming out very soon now, Samuel?
This year. It's been done mostly for a while.
Well, first of all, you started working on it, what, 2012?
2013, yeah.
2013. And it was just one of those things where the technology just kept getting better, and you kept redoing it and redoing it and redoing
it. I knew how to make it, but the visual effects are a huge part of any Trek fan film. When you start without much of understanding of it, and then you become pretty darn good, you sort of want to make sure it reflects your quality. Luckily, I was already a professional filmmaker, so my filming standard was really good, and that's held up a treat. So, yay.
But we've been waiting for Temporal Anomaly now for years and years. I mean, you crowdfunded.
Well, you've all forgotten about it, but thank you.
You know what? Some people haven't forgotten about it because I covered it on Fan Film Factor earlier on this year. And then, after I covered it, apparently people at CBS do read my blog because somebody contacted you. They saw your trailer, which had clips of Picard and Riker and Worf from Star Trek Insurrection, and from
all three of them,
and from First Contact, and also from Nemesis, and apparently that's a big no-no as far as the guidelines are concerned. You can't use.
Didn't realize I was the first one to do that. So apparently I was. So
yeah, so that was that. They had some other issues as well. They had problems with your music.
Well, yeah, the fact that I used any music, which is the standard, but.
And, of course, the other thing was that you were also planning on going over the 15-minute or 2 15-minute, so a half-hour time limit, because yours was almost an hour long at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so,
written to be so 4 years before the guidelines came out, so, yeah.
And so CBS contacted you. And then what happened?
I mean, I was, you know, part of this is not getting too far into it, but the short story being that, you know, I was about to release it, as you know. I think I was about 2 days away from the release. I was contacted but the tone of the email was such that I wanted to chat back rather than react. A lot of people might take such an email and go public and burn a bridge. I'm not like that. I saw it as a problem to overcome, and so I contacted them, I got a phone call with them within a day or so, had some conversations, and worked out under what criteria it could be released. And obviously they knew Trek Yards, they knew my work previously, they understand the nature of its age, the fact that, you can't just take a 55-minute film and cut it into 30. It will ruin the piece because you pace things directly within that time frame. So it couldn't have been shrunk. But through talks with them, I worked out the sort of the correct way to publicly release it, although they were fine to privately release it as it was intended. And it's worth dialing back to the footage thing. When I wrote Temporal Anomaly, I was coming right off the heels of my Stargate fan film, which was in 2012. And that's obviously, a long, long time ago in a very different environment. You couldn't necessarily do prosumer graphics even at that time. I did this at university, my second year, or my end of my first year, sorry, to be something cool to do, to test myself and to show I could do it. I was a huge fan of Stargate. And part of that was the fact that the story took place within the first episode of Stargate Universe. So it integrated real footage, green screen, live action, and putting people inside live action from the show. So obviously moving into Star Trek Temporal Anomaly, I knew I wanted to incorporate the trick I just used 6 months ago with Stargate Universe Distant Hope. And obviously at that point, I was a second year university, well, third year, I suppose, university student, not expecting to be watched by anyone else except my parents. So the story came first, the narrative came first. And obviously my public profile has somewhat grown in the last 5 years. My professional work has grown in the last 5 years, so I guess couldn't get away with that, as it were. But it worked out a way of releasing it, and I've been working hard on that. Whole new soundtrack, which is annoying but exciting in its own way. But I basically get to keep the length and some other things, as long as I change some other things. But yeah, I'm waiting on the music guy, and the VFX are all done, the green screen's all done. I think there's a couple of shadows I could probably improve. But
But you
yeah,
basically
just.
you remove Picard and Riker and Worf and Data and
Yeah,
all those.
I had to make a new intro and a new outro, which does affect the emotional core of the film and the cool start, which, the live action from the shows was only in about a minute 12 of the film. So it was very, very minimum. Obviously, in a trailer, you don't get a sense of that. But I sent CBS clips and they were like, oh, okay, is that all? We had this whole conversation. But yeah, so I've worked out and it'll be coming out this year for sure. I suppose there's a nice little bonus to Convergence. You're seeing this suddenly, this new work, and then suddenly, for the creator of Convergence comes Temporal Anomaly from 5 years ago.
But that also keys into the last piece of your five-part crossover puzzle, because the last fan film that is crossing over in this mega crossover is Temporal Anomaly. You've got
Is Temporal Anomaly, yes, the
two
one.
characters from that going into this.
Yes, I've been on this journey for 5 years constantly to make Temporal Anomaly. But once I walked away from the university and the people that are involved in it, some of which are married now and got their own lives because I was using acting students. But for Convergence, I knew that I wanted to, if I could, I hadn't talked to them in months, include my own characters because they were really interesting people. There was something to go from there. And so yes, I managed to bring back Chris Burdett playing Captain James Monroe once again, looking a bit older, different uniform. He was happy about that, better uniform he thought. With our beard, looks great. And if you've seen the Indiegogo, you can see his stark difference in 5 years. And Nimran Sorn coming back, who was playing Ensign Rachel Keeley from the Nexo-1 timeline, who's now playing her great granddaughter, Lieutenant Rachel Keeley, and she was thrilled about promotion.
And she doesn't look a day older.
She actually looks amazing. She looks absolutely amazing. And it's great to see her maturity as just a person. Because part of making everyone an ensign in Temporal Anomaly was that they were young. That played into the story, but it was important. And now she is older. Lieutenant worked just fine. And she adds a lot of extra to that. And the same with Chris. So much more charisma. You can see how he's changed as a person. It really reflects. He's a wonderful actor. And get to deal with them all on set together was a really amazing experience. Totally different to Temporal Anomaly, but in a really good way.
Well, let's start focusing again on Convergence, because that's what we're talking about today. So how did this mega crossover idea start? What was the first molecule in your head, the first neuron to fire in your brain?
So I have been working on track yards for 4-ish years, 3, 4 years, and my co-host Stuart Foley has been tinkering and creating his own stuff for a while in terms of original ship designs, and he finally got his own ship built, designed, and he's amazed by it. And our fan base has asked me, when am I doing my own ship? For years now, years and years. And I finally reached out to someone that worked on Trek to work with me to design a ship. I had a concept, they had the skills, let's work together. It was a true bucket list thing, and it was an absolutely amazing experience. And that took several months, and I was very happy with the result. And in January, the ship was done in concept, and I loved it. And I knew that obviously I'm going to have to do animations if I want to bring it to life. But it was such a close personal thing to me. I wanted to tell a story with it. Well, a story has to have characters, but you need to have a really good story. And if I'm doing another fan film, it should be something special because Temporal Anomaly was the first, and still only, somehow after 5 years, after half a decade, the only fan film to include every era in one film. Even as Discovery, references, because it was made after Discovery as well. Temporal Anomaly is the first and biggest crossover of its kind. You mentioned earlier that fans have crossed over fan films, but we are actually flying Jim from America, Nick from Scotland, Robin from the Netherlands, me from my house. We're all flying in.
You're flying from your house?
I'm getting a bus. I'm getting a bus.
Okay.
Flying in to a proper studio at the university again. They very kindly let me film it once again, but with proper camera kit, several thousand worth each, at zero cost to me, or a little bit of a cost, but basically zero, to film at a proper studio with proper, lighting and sound. The opportunity presented itself, and I was able to walk into it. So the quality is such that we are truly crossing everyone over. Every character has a distinct part. Every character has character moments. Every character has links to their own stories. And given that Robin and Nick are both doing more stories, they have subtle little hints to their future things. So it is a true crossover. It's not a no one is a cameo. No one is there for the sake of it. Everyone is integrated fully into the story and plays off each other. And in the same room, you get the truest sense of crossover. There's one scene where every captain is in the same room at a briefing, and it's going to be magic after we raise the funds to fly Jim over, because our biggest expense is flying everyone from 4 countries. Yeah.
So you've got a goal on your Indiegogo of what, it's $5,500 American dollars. So that is that going only to plane tickets at this point?
No, that's going to travel, which includes trains, includes car rides, because everyone has to travel by some
Planes, trains,
means.
and automobiles then.
Absolutely,
Okay.
hotels for everyone, because I've got to
Hotels.
stay by the set. Food, I'm not going to let them do their own food, and we've already filmed a session, so I know it mounts up very, very quickly. Plus all the new 3D assets created, because again, we want a certain quality, and while everyone's working for, fan film friend rates, we're all offering something. And that's part of it. And obviously fees for Indiegogo and all these things, plus recouping myself for the first crowdfunder, plus some pre-production stuff I did. So it's just travel plus the things to make it.
Sorry, so you're also paying for 3D assets, you said, but aren't you the 3D guy? Are you paying yourself?
Oh, this is my passion project. I mean, I'm donating a lot of time for VFX. No. We've got an original ship, original 3D sets, original designs, original, I mean, this is a brand new ship with the brand new sets. We had to build the Batavia Bridge, all sorts of things like that. So it's the pieces to create the film, and I'm putting my own time in to do the green screening for free because it's my project, to do the space visual effects for free because it's my project. I mean, that's what you spend in time. But it's a
So,
film that shows off my brand new.
hold on. So let me ask. So you said that you have to pay for the 3D, but you're doing the
Well, it.
3D. Who's getting paid then for the 3D, for the
Well, so,
assets?
well, okay. There's 3D asset because I'm an animator, not a 3D asset creator. I can't model for anything,
Okay.
so I can only quote unquote animate things. As we know in Star Trek, times past, especially in Voyager, they had animators on the team. They had animators. They'd sorry. They had asset creators on the team. They had animators on the team. I'm good at one. I have zero skill in the other. So to create a new bridge set, I've turned to people that I've met through Trek Yards, and we're, working out to create some high quality set pieces to be able to create this production.
Okay, so you're paying them for their time in creating these assets. I just wanted to make sure that you weren't paying yourself because we all sort of remember what happens when fan film makers try to raise money to pay themselves anything, and we don't want that to happen to you. I didn't want anybody to misunderstand. So you're basically, you're still destitute, you're still eating ramen noodles, but you're...
I'm still working on Trek Yards to earn the rent.
There you go.
And then this sort of became bigger than it was meant to be, but when you know you have a good idea, and like when you know you have an idea that you're really excited about, I should say, you guys can judge if it's a good idea or not. You know, when the stars align, you've got to sort of follow it until it finishes. I've had multiple ideas over the years, but this one sort of took hold, and the ability to bring in these people from around the world and talk to Renegades and use them officially, absolutely amazing. So I worked on Renegades in the behind-the-scenes department, and I've worked on Intrepid a little bit and all these things. I met everyone beforehand. So it's kind of, I mean, the satisfaction. I think of it this way, that I made a film in 2012, and it stands on its own. I made a Trek film in 2013. Okay, it wasn't released till 2018, but it still represented a level I was then. Now in 2018, I can make a film that represents how I am truly now. And so it's kind of a bookend of my Trek career, as it were, my dip in the toe in fan films. This is where I came from, this is where I ended up, sort of project. And then I get to work with some amazing people to make something that's hopefully will stand the test of time.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, from what I've seen so far, it looks amazing. Your virtual sets, if you folks haven't watched the teasers, the virtual set made an appearance in the third teaser. And did it make an appearance in your Ask video as well?
Yes, I mean, there's multiple... there's teasers of environments. Yeah, we see the Horizon Bridge. Well, again, everything is very work in progress. I knew I wanted to be able to show a lot of stuff, but to get it looking proper... it needs more work, and obviously we haven't got the money yet. You know, we self-funded a lot of it, but it's all in a set budget, and then Indiegogo is to raise that budget sort of back again, as it were.
In other words, you're basically playing catch-up. You're already paid for everything. You're just hoping to reimburse.
I'm doing the Star Trek Continues method. You know, Vic invested in getting the sets up and scratch. He invested in allowing the episode to be made, and then he reimbursed himself after the fact when he sold the sets, you know. So he was able to create something to show people, to prove that he could do it. I mean, Republic as well. They made the vignette, self-funded, asked for money, got some money, different story. Because in this day and age, you've got to prove it. And we're all so passionate. I mean, think about it. We've got a collective history of, 30 years of fan films, all of our years combined. That's a lot of passion. So these guys weren't to fly in on their own dime to make this amazing project. But it had to be a two shoot session, and other things involved. It's ambitious, but it was very cleverly written, because fundamentally we're in a post guideline world now. You know, it's got to be written with those in mind. So writing a 30-minute crossover event of 4.5 films, tricky as anything, but so rewarding to get to that, you know, page 31, because of the post credit sequence, and I'm hoping it's going to fit in.
I have to say, I think if you're like 31 minutes and 14 seconds or whatever,
yeah,
I really don't think CBS is going to come down on you. If you're doing your best to follow those guidelines, especially after you were so agreeable the first time and said, you know, look, I'll cut it down as much as I can, but I can't get it down from I can't get it down from 52 minutes to a half an hour, and they let you do it. You're reasonable. And I think a lot of fan producers, they have this paranoia that if they go to 30 minutes and 1 second, they're suddenly going to find themselves sued. And I can't believe that CBS is going to go through all this hassle again for 1 second or 1 minute or even 5 minutes. And there's also some fan series at this point that have completely ignored the time limit. You know, Starship Antilles continues to release stuff that's 45 minutes, 50 minutes long. Quark Space Station, you know, hour-long episodes post-guidelines.
Potemkin, multiple episodes, same characters. Mm-hmm. Vance, obviously, multiple characters, same stories. I mean, it's all relative, you know. And I think the fact that we are having discussed directly with CBS, on the phone, you know, all this, I've got an original score being created for Convergence. Straight away. It's 30 minutes. These are all fans at the head of their productions, all coming in, not getting paid for the time, just for the travel, because everyone's flying, you know, internationally. You know, these are the truest fans of the fan film. You know, these are the fans. So it's a real passion project. So I think what we're doing is special, and because obviously I'm doing the green screen and the space visual effects, that takes out two humongous budget concerns. that I'm lucky I've self-taught over 4 or 5 years, that I can generate this extra value and just write it off. You know, this is, you know, and obviously the other guys, Nick and Robin and Jim, they have to show up and be brilliant. And then I have to spend the next, you know, 6, 7 months spending time editing, and hopefully loving it. Not there yet, but hopefully loving it, because we haven't filmed the rest.
Now, when you say 6 or 7 months, that's not going to turn into 6 or 7 years, is
Well, no.
Just
No,
looking at
again,
temporal
as you pointed
anomalies.
out, I mean, every single thing in Temporal Anomaly got updated at least once to twice. Every single thing. Whereas this film, we already have all the spaceships done, ready. Okay, the horizon's not 100%, but you've seen it in the Indiegogo video. It's basically done. All the sets are at least 40% done. So good, and at least I can do previs, so at least I can see what I need. So those biggest things have already been addressed, and it's just a case of me spending time to build the shots. Now, I will say that I spent about a week of my time. I probably shouldn't spend that much time, but I want to show the actors. We did a Skype screen read with everyone, a couple of weeks before the shooting, the first part of shooting, or at least the first segment. And I spent about a week actually editing that Skype session into a full cut of the film to see how long it would be, to add music, see the pace, and to give the actors a sense of, well, how'd it play? Because Skype, when people are making jokes and talking about it, doesn't quite equate to the feel. And I'm a crazy man, and I made all the visual effects for the film. Early simple versions, but I needed to see how it would feel. And I really liked it, and I learned lots of lessons. I knew what I needed to film, and I changed the script a little bit, and we changed a few words because things just didn't work. Some little things. And so I have a reasonably good understanding of the entire film. And I've been slowly rendering star layers and pieces that I'm like, that shot is probably done. Probably done. So I can try and render it as final, you know. So I'm certainly ahead of the curve in terms of that. It's a very well-planned film, with a very fine tooth comb scope that is very achievable, if that makes any sense.
Makes perfect sense. And one of the reasons I was
Cool.
asking you that question is that there's a number of folks out there in the fan film community who are sometimes reluctant to give to a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo if they're not really familiar with the filmmaker, or if there's a feeling like, I'm not really sure this person can deliver. Obviously, you know, Temporal Anomaly was crowdfunded initially with, I mean, like probably less than 30 donors. Back in
Yes, 24
2013,
donors, and
24
two
donors.
being, four being
Four
family
being family
friends, yeah.
friends, but then, you know, 5 years later, it still wasn't out. So there were a number of people who might be listening to this who were saying, well, you know, can he actually finish a fan film? And honestly, I think you can. And I'll tell you, folks, I've seen the not necessarily rough cut, it was almost finished version of Temporal Anomaly. And I know that Samuel's been working very, very hard to get it cut down a little bit, to get the music redone. And when it does come out, you're gonna be amazed. You know, it was definitely worth the wait, but I also know that things happen faster after a certain sort of hibernation time.
Well, honestly, just as PC power increased, what I could do became quicker. When I upgraded my PC from this last generation to this generation, I could suddenly load the entire film green screen in one piece of edited, but I could not do it in the previous PC, and that made it a ton easier. It rendered times from 10 hours of a scene just see it down to 2. You know, technology has kept up with me, or I've kept up with the technology. So that's really great. And I will note, you know, as you guys have hopefully seen at the start of the Indiegogo video, I mentioned I've worked on, you know, a number of fan films. You know, Once More the Feeling came out in between our last interview, Jonathan, and this one, and that I did 17 VFX shots for that. So I can obviously deliver shots on finished projects. You know, Robin and War I'm working on, and many others. So I'm still,
You go
I'm always
ahead.
working
Go
on.
give the list. What other fan films have you
Oh,
worked on, or are
gosh.
you working on? Or
Gosh.
is the list
As
of
a
how many fan films you haven't worked on shorter?
No, I'm very selective. Although they come to me, so I'm just sort of like, hey, that sounds cool. No, Starship Republic, Serpents of Yesterday. I'm also working on Starship Republic 3.0, Star Trek Intrepid. I've done some VFX. So that's how I met Nick. He asked, and I offered. I was like, Nick, you are such a legacy act. I've got to help with you some VFX. Once More Feeling, three, if not four episodes of Federation Files with Glenn Wolfe, Raptor's Wing, or that was a working title, the Romulan War fan film, Temporal Anomaly, obviously, and then Convergence, so a good number.
So you're busy.
And then Trek Yards is the full-time job. You know, I've delivered 700-800 episodes of Fleet Yards, Trek Yards, and podcasts. So, I mean, having a job necessitates not working on your hobby as much.
But I people know, I've got a blog.
Yeah. So people have seen me deliver a lot of work constantly over the last 4 years. You know, it shouldn't be as much of a concern as it would have been. And obviously, just the fact that I'm more professional, more experienced, should give people confidence. But again, written in a post-guideline world, half an hour is a limitation, but also a blessing, that it can only be half an hour. That's a finite amount of visual effects, finite amount of green screen.
Keeps your
that makes
down.
It quicker to make.
Keeps your editing time down. That's true.
It
forces you to be concise. There's some fan films that came out, you know, in the early days of fan films that ran so long, and you're just like, you know what, you could really have made this scene about 30 seconds long instead of the 6 minutes that I'm watching. So, you know, in that way, I don't ever want to say the words, the guidelines are a blessing. But, you know, for some fan films, they probably aren't, you know, as much of a curse as one might think. You just don't realize it until you are forced to make your script tighter. But that being said, I just wanted to let folks know that, you know, when I made my contribution to this Indiegogo campaign, and I did contribute, there was no hesitation whatsoever. My feeling is that, you know, this is an exciting fan film. This is a guy who can get it done. So I am not worried that this is going to take another 5 years to get done. I'm pretty sure, Samuel, that we're going to see it next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was my hope. Originally, I will say this, originally, my plan was to finish, I think I must have mentioned this to you way back when, was to film it all and then release it within 1 year. Because I filmed this in March, I believe. The intention was to film again about a month later, and then Indiegogo. Well, originally it was going to be one session, but it couldn't be due to a number of... people couldn't fly over at certain times. That was a problem. So it had to be two. And the studio closed down for 7 months. So I'm currently waiting for it to reopen. But I'm not going to rush them because they give me a very, very nice rate. I was at university there for 4 years. I've helped them a lot. So they, you know, but that was a forced delay. But obviously the 3D assets took months and months to create. And honestly, I worked very hard. We all did. But I obviously had to be in control of the filming of that first session. And it was brutal. I mean, we filmed like a third of the, you know, 35 pages of a really, you know, good dialogue, a lot of camera angles. I had three cameras to work with. I had a dedicated behind-the-scenes person that was Robin's girlfriend that flew over too. To film behind-the-scenes, I had to direct her a little bit, and we had to do interviews for Indiegogo. I had to do vignettes, because there was going to be some more vignettes you guys are going to see during the campaign that especially filmed on set to enjoy. One, I hope you love, Jonathan. It's a comedy thing. I really hope you enjoy it, because it's really fun to write. So it was a lot of work, and I then had to, you know, prep. I had to get drinks for everyone in the evening to bring in the morning and snacks, and it was a lot of thought, and I was honestly burned out when I came back, because obviously the week beforehand I had to prep, make sure it was all right. So it was a very, very tiring experience to film. We were basically doing, I don't know if you have this in America, but we have a system where you can learn to drive over 6 months, 8 months, or over a weekend. Yeah, it's called a crash course. You literally spend like 9 till like 7 both days.
Wait, you learn to drive and it's called a crash course?
Yeah.
This does that.
Well, no, I don't know if it's called that, but it feels like a crash course for those that have done it. But it's like you're forced into the most intense, amazing experience. I've not done it, but I have several friends that did, and they were able to drive at the end of that weekend. I think Monday is the test. And so this felt like a super crash course of just intense filming. But it was really rewarding. Because everyone was so prepared. I honestly, not to toot the horn, but I think given the experience these actors have got over the years and the experience I have in directing, because often a not-so-experienced director can not service the story of the actors as well as they could do. I think I'll be able to lift the performances beyond places they've been before. So I think this will be one of their best performances in other fan films. I'm really proud of that because I also wrote the dialogue. So it's a great unison of directing and then getting the best out of them and saying, Robin, let's try that again, but this smidge bit of, let's try it with this. And then feeling the vibe, just everyone's like, yes, that works so well. And seeing it come to life. And then Nim, who's an absolute treasure, as you could tell from the Indiegogo video, such a treasure of an actor. She did lines I didn't expect. And I was so thrilled. She brought so much new to it. And you've got to run with that, you know. If they bring better than you write, use it, you know.
Yeah, and you know, for those of you who haven't made a film, you know, not that I'm a very experienced filmmaker myself, but I've seen these things come together. I've worked on them, and I've seen words on a page turn into scenes on a screen. And it really, it's magical. It's absolutely one of the most amazing things to watch when it works. When it doesn't work, it's more frustrating. And when you have a director, you know, who's willing to just, you know, have people come and recite their lines and then walk off camera without really giving them direction, that can be, you know, not as good. But when it all comes together, when it all gels, you get some amazing things happening. It's one of the reasons I love fan films so much because, you know, when we see Avengers or, you know, we see any of the other big blockbuster movies, we're not there. I mean, we see the special bonus features on the DVDs or whatever, and we see the making of. But you're not really there. You don't really get a chance to watch it all and to see it all be made and to really know the people who are doing it. And in the fan film world, you do. And granted, you know, we're not making the Avengers. We're not making the $200 million budgeted films.
With a team of 8,000, you know, 800 people,
800 or 8,000. I
you
mean, I've looked at the credits for the
know.
Marvel movies. There's 8,000 people there. But yeah, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it's a chance to watch the magic being made, even on a small scale. And it's amazing. So if you have a chance to either make a fan film yourself or to work with people who are making a fan film, and I realize not every fan has that opportunity, but there's volunteer opportunities out there for a lot of productions. It's something that you really, if you have the opportunity, go for it. Because it's really, it's like no other experience you'll ever have.
It should be a synergy of script, actor, director, and then editor, which can help refine a performance. This is one reason I sort of, quote, in principle, I only try to use people with acting backgrounds, because they bring more to it. They have to. That's their job. You know, I said to each actor, and I would still count Robin and Jim and Nick as actors because they've got a decade of experience acting, and certainly Nick has really honed that character. You know what I said to them before we go on to set: I'll handle everything else. You just need to know your lines, you know, at least enough. We'll rehearse everything, but you know, you're the actor. That's your one job. I'll deal with the camera, the sound, the editing, the costumes. Bring me you learning knowing your lines, and we'll hone that performance into perfection. And I was so proud of everyone. Because they didn't have long to learn them. This was a very, very quick turnaround, one of the quickest any of us have been involved in. Because again, I felt like it was a spark of inspiration. And I will not say the film is the most original concept ever. And I've gone the record on Trek Yard saying, you know, having a big bad of the week isn't the most interesting plot ever. But the Renegade Siphons are such a wonderfully deep, if you choose to use them. In the way they could be used, sort of way that I knew they, if I could, because I worked on Renegades, I knew many, many people involved in it. If I could use them and get permission, they were an amazing villain, or antagonist. Hey, you could see their point of view, you know, maybe. But really, it's a character piece. It's a morality tale. I say in the Indiegogo video, we have a clear villain, and that helps focus us. But there is more layers to the story. Each character has motivations. Each character has a journey. There might be different levels of complexity, but there is a start and an end point, and we do get moments of each character and moments of action and moments of indecision and of questions being asked to the audience. You know, when I write anything, story based, I like having, first of all, in Trek, actors playing characters that are professional. If you are on a starship, a good starship, you need to be either very good at what you do. Very, very good at what you do, or just good at what you do. You're not getting on the Galaxy Class Enterprise D unless you're very damn good. So there shouldn't be stupid mess ups or pressing a button to fire torpedoes and destroy a colony. That stuff should not happen for a clever writer. So how do you work around that if they're all professional? Well, deal with morality, deal with questions. You know, one thing Nick Cook said to me right away, he's not a perfect captain. He's actually a very subpar captain in many ways. So use that. the imperfections of these people. These are not Kirk, Picard, or whatever. These are people dealing with a situation where there is honestly no right or wrong. Where you fall on the question of this story is up to you, and I don't make the story decide for you which you're going to go with. Because there should be sort of two sides, and even though the antagonists, the villains, are doing bad things, what do we do? How do we work out the ending? And I liked that a lot. That's why I wrote it. But it was a great, fun thing. I don't necessarily like the ambiguous grey of, say, Renegades. Federation Admirals doing really horrible things or betraying people. That's not so much the way. But if you can understand why certain captains may think certain things, then you've got a smarter story.
So let me ask you about the stretch goals. We know that you've already had one of your two filming shoots. You are trying to film another one, you know, so you're paying for planes, trains, and automobiles. You're paying for hotels. You're paying for food. You're paying for some 3D models or whatever, and that's going to be $5,500. So you've got a stretch goal of like $10,000. What is that extra for? Are you going to fly them first class? Are you going to Uber them?
No. I think we're gone of the era of the high budget, the high production value fan films. We're in the age of mid level, where you can make $10,000 go a long way if you do it the fan film way, which Romulan War is doing, Republic was going to do, and what's more, Holy Core was going to do. You know, it's sort of professionals doing what they do, but in a true fan film way. But people expect a certain quality now, given modern technology. You know, you can't really just shoot a home movie and call it a fan film and expect thousands to watch it, which if you put the effort in, you'd like people to watch it. And so 10,000 was what they all asked for their goal. We've been very good with our goal because, you know, we added a lot of it ourselves. I'm doing all my, you know, the green screen VFX is for free because of my project. But we wanted to give people the option to make it better. You know, this 30 minutes is the absolute minimum, as is always the case. You know, I could obviously ask for 7,000 and have, you know, happy days. You know, if you know, temporal anomaly, random fees came up, things being flown in, you know, cost, and I couldn't, that was well after. For example, we had a costume set for an actor. Costume didn't fit a week before the shoot, and we had to buy a new one. And thank goodness, miracle happened, we managed to find one that was perfect. And that was extra money that we didn't have. But I was like, no, I have to, whatever it is, I have to buy it. I have to spend it. We can't lose this actor on the shoot. So I spent quite a lot extra because it was literally the only one in the world that would be appropriate. That was an extra thing to add to the budget. You know, Jim has to fly in. An international cost for America is pretty expensive. You know, that's a hefty cost. Everyone else has to fly in, like you said. So yeah, things happen that you don't expect. But also, the film, that's the bare minimum. But my goal is to be able to make, if you guys support it, it's all optional, isn't it? We have some amazing perks. If you want to get to support it, you know, simple things, posters is the primary. You know, simple things that are easy, but that mount up if you get bundled, as it were. We want to add stuff to the film. So it's a 30-minute cut, but we'd love to do a donor exclusive cut, which is longer. You know, bringing these people together for the first time is an amazing experience. And we're very efficient on the first shoot, and we are pretty sure that we'll have a couple of hours on the last shoot, extra time. And we want to use that to add a little bit of extra content to the film. By that, I only mean like a couple of minutes of extra scenes, but they could be really cool scenes. And so, as you see in the stretch goals, there's a specific scene I would love to add that takes place in the engineering room of the Horizon, this brand new ship. You know, see the ship more fleshed out. All that needs engineering room designed, built, textured, lit. I can do half that myself, but I can't do the other half. And that's a separate set. And obviously you've got to then film that. I'd love to do another scene in a corridor layout, because again, it would open up the film from a film that takes place on the bridge of the ships mostly to a more full feeling episode, as it were, which is, as I say, a digital exclusive just to the donors. So if you donate any level, you can see a slightly longer version. That's what you'll get to see. It doesn't change the story, but it enhances the event of bringing these people together. And one of the big goals I would love to do is be able to do a whole lot of behind the scenes. You know, I worked on Renegades for free. I did about 3.5 hours of special features chronicling the making of the original Star Trek Renegades. And that was an amazing experience, but it took over a month of full time. I had to literally pause my work on Trek Yards and take an unpaid month sabbatical to be able to spend time on that. And I was so proud of the results, but it does take time. And so if we funded more, I'd love to put some of that into being able to produce you know, we filmed a lot of content, produce a blooper reel, documentaries, interviews, so you all get to enjoy this journey even further. We're not going to release a DVD or a Blu-ray, so these will all be released publicly, but the ability to create them and not sit in the footage for years, you know, and in turn, you know, stretch goals are important because things like Star Trek Renegades, the first one, you know, their stretch goals were like, you know, having more real sets, having an Icarus bridge, you know, things that were like, well, this will make the film better if we include it. That's the thing. It's a stretch goal. We have bigger ambitions. If you'd like to help us get them, get to those, you can donate, but you'll get the film either way.
So let me ask you about these perks. Now, I've seen some of the artwork that you have for your posters. And if you're using what you showed me, there's images of an Intrepid class ship, the Intrepid itself, a Nova class ship. Aren't those all copyrighted / trademarked?
Well, all of Star Trek is copyrighted and trademarked.
So if you're giving away perks that are posters...
Well, we're not going to say Star Trek on them. We're not going to use the logo. We're not going to use the... you know, any of the main stuff. No, the way we thought about it is we can't do much, but we can do a few things really snazzily. You know, people like posters. That's kind of the way that I envisioned it going, because it's easy, it's simple, and it's something that really represents the production but doesn't break the bank for anybody, you know. And so I went about working with artists to create a series of poster prints that reflect each, again, it's a crossover event. So each captain take inspiration from the event, from the Civil War, I believe, take inspiration from their poster art, doing a series of like I did for the Romulan War, doing a series of unique ship art prints, which again showed off the ships, their cool bits of memorabilia. I think everything will be signed. You know, we're all just people, just fans, but again, these will be a one-time offer thing in limited numbers because we feel like if we gave unlimited, that'd be a bad precedent, but everything has a limited number. So there's a finite amount of money we can make, which is a good thing. You know, if we got 20,000, I don't know what we'd do with it, you know? This is not that sort of production.
Well, and what then happens if you do get 20,000?
I don't know. Cross that bridge when we get to it. I don't even know what we're doing. I haven't even checked today's number, so I don't know. We'll see. It'll probably go into the production or into a sequel. I don't know. Haven't got there yet. But hey, thanks, guys, if you are supporting us that much. Signed scripts, again, same thing. It's just a script from the set, signed, and a cool bit of memorabilia that we can offer. So it's really simple stuff, but hopefully people feel there's value in to them. And, you know, you've got to get something for your donation. That's how these crowdfunding sources work. But we thought, really simple, really nice things that are just based on the production itself. Nothing too extraneous, nothing too complicated, nothing too big. Simple stuff, but in a bundle form. So if you want to get all 15 posters and save, because each one is worth something in the campaign, or you can buy all 10, or donate, I should say, all 10 for all 10, and make a huge saving on that, then, you know, I think one of the perks, if we get all of those perks, we get like half the funding. So if there's 20 of you that want to get that one perk, thank you so much. We're basically there, you know. And I know that most people will not give. That's just a reality. Each fan film in the past, most of them are driven by the actors. We're long past that now. We hope the quality and the passion will inspire people. But the fact is, the Romulan War only had about 140 people donating, and they got 12,000. So a few strong people who are really passionate about a project and want to support more can make a project. I don't expect to get more than 150 people. It'd be great if we did. And that's a really small subset of people, but that are choosing to support a Trek fan project that is in the guidelines as far as they can be, and is something unique and special in the community, and that we are all very proud of. And it's a legacy I want to leave, because I'm the catalyst to bring Nick and Robin for the first time together in 10 years. They've been talking about it for 10 years, roughly, and I got them together within 3 months, and they were thrilled. So it's a great little, you know, we're bringing families together, fan film families together. And I will end on
family. We're bringing people together. We're flying them in.
And I will end on saying that what's funny about Convergence, a Star Trek fan film, is that we are a Temporal Anomaly sequel, a Republic spin-off in a sense, a Renegades prequel, an Intrepid mid-film film, because he has films after this, and a Dark Armada prequel. The very first time you see Robin Hiatt in a First Contact costume, and the very first time you see him in his own continuity. So we're a tie-in of all these different fan projects. We make it one big expanded universe, in a sense, and they're all thrilled.
Well, I'll tell you, for one, I cannot wait to see it. I've given my money. I'm one of those 150 people, folks.
Thank you.
Hopefully, the rest of you listening, there's at least 150 people listening to this today. Be one of those 150 people. Give your money to this very enthusiastic Brit.
Yeah. And I will just say, if we don't reach our funding goal, the fact is, we've already all spent money. So if we only get half, hopefully it'll be enough to get everyone back for the second shoot. At the end of the day, we had a budget. If it's not raised, that's fair enough. That's in the past. But we'd like to raise the budget we set aside with this campaign. But if not, if we get enough to fly everyone in for the second shoot, we can make it. If not, we'll have to, pinch the pennies and make it happen our own selves. But we're dedicated to make it happen for sure. Unless we get $10, then we can't. But thanks, Jonathan, for more than 10. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Samuel, once again for your time today. Best of luck in the weeks that you have left on the Indiegogo.
Yeah, thank you for your time. It's nice to be able to talk about this with a consummate professional of fan films.
Well, thank you. And we'll have you back when Temporal Anomaly finally comes out after 5 years. And I definitely want to ask you some questions about
That would be nice. Thanks.
that. All right. Live long and prosper, my friend.